97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back into the Mark Cox Morning Show on a Friday morning. Good to have you with us. We are roughly an hour away from the United States Supreme Court releasing a lot of very important decisions on what is technically the final day of the term. I guess they could extend it, but I think everybody's expecting that this morning will be the time when they release five critical decisions, not the least of which includes, I believe, birthright citizenship and this whole issue of lower courts issuing these injunctions all over the place, and they've issued a lot of them against President Donald Trump. We are fortunate this morning to get Professor Alan Dershowitz on the phone with us. Of course, you see him on television all the time. He's got a new book out called The Preventive State. And Professor, welcome into the show. How are you?
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I hope people will read The Preventive State. It tells us about a real dangerous trend that we're going toward in America, where the government has power to take preventive actions without there being constraints. And so I wrote a book trying to set up a balance between the need to prevent horrible things and the need also to prevent denials of civil liberty. So that's my book, The Preventive State.
Yes, sir. And how does that play out with this decision, the court we assume will make today, dealing with all of these injunctions that are getting filed all the time? It seems like they've carried this entirely too far.
Yeah, and injunctions are always preventive. And, of course, deportation is preventive. We used to call it, people were sent out of the country as aliens. Deportation is part of that. And so there are a lot of these preventive mechanisms that are being used. The court is dealing with them, but the court doesn't have a jurisprudence. It's just acting in an ad hoc way. Today it rules one way, tomorrow it rules the other way. I'm trying to set up a jurisprudence that will cover things like injunctions and things like deportation. And the bombing of Iran was obviously preventive in nature. So we're living in the preventive state. We just don't have a jurisprudence or a framework for analyzing whether we're doing it right or wrong. And that's what I try to provide in the preventive state.
Curious to get your take on this whole situation where you have some of these particularly Democratic Congress members who are angry, saying, you know, Trump moved forward with this Iran bombing without talking about it with them first. Now, Caroline Leavitt has refuted that, saying that they did reach out to some of these key members in Congress. But the argument from the right is, if we wanted to make these big decisions and had to go through Congress on every single one of them, we would never get anything done. What's your take?
Not only that, but the framers of the Constitution understood this. The original Constitution gave Congress the power to make war. And James Madison, the father of the Constitution, said, no, that would constrain the president too much in the event of an imminent threat. And so they limited the power of Congress to declaring war. We haven't declared war since 1942. And every president virtually has made war. Obama made war on Libya. Clinton made war on a number of places. Obviously, we made war in Iraq, and the complaints only are partisan complaints. It's a completely frivolous argument that the President of the United States had to even notify Congress that it was going to be engaged in a secret bombing. First of all, you can't trust Congress. They leak like a sieve. And so the president did exactly the right thing, a surprise attack. He then announced that he was declaring peace, not war. He said, I don't want war. I don't want boots on the ground. I want you to come to the negotiating table. Let's make peace. It's the most absurd, partisan, ridiculous argument. I lay out the answer to it completely in my book, The Preventive State. I make the case for why presidents obviously have the power to take preventive action to stop. If we could have taken preventive action to stop 9/11, if Israel could have taken preventive action to stop October 7th, everybody would have been thrilled, but we didn't do it. And the president and the chief executive has to have that authority.
Yeah. Professor Alan Dershowitz with us right now, talking about his new book there. All right. Treat me like one of your first year law students here. if the court rules today against the overwhelming number of injunctions, I believe that's one of the questions they're going to address today. Would that be a step toward the jurisprudence you're talking about?
Absolutely, and okay. I think the court will. I don't think the court is going to strike down birthright citizenship. I don't think without Congress, without a constitutional amendment, the 14th Amendment basically says if you're born in this country and you are subject to its jurisdiction, you're a citizen. I don't think the courts can interfere with that, but they may not reach that issue. They may only turn to the issue of national injunctions. Look, the answer to that is ultimately legislative. What we should do is create a new court, say 5 members or 7 members from around the country. And if you want a national injunction, as distinguished from just an injunction that applies to the 2 parties that are before you, you have to go to this special court. And if it grants it, it's immediately appealable to the Supreme Court, like the FISA court.
Sure.
So I think there's an answer to it, but the current situation is absolutely unacceptable. A judge somewhere in Idaho can tell the entire country that they can't deport criminals, and that's just not acceptable. So I think the court's going to have to do something about that, and it, you know, probably will act today.
Well, it's unsustainable, certainly for the long term. But it is out of whack when you consider how many of these injunctions were filed against President Trump compared to President Biden or President Obama.
Yeah, but, you know, let's be fair about it. President Trump, to his credit, has pushed the envelope more than any president since Roosevelt. Roosevelt pushed the envelope. Lincoln pushed the envelope. Jefferson pushed the envelope. So it's not surprising to me that the Democrats are fighting back, but it's up to the courts. The courts should not become part of this partisan debate. They are referees. They're not players. And too many judges selected by the Democrats, that is, you know, judge shopping. You pick a judge in the District of Columbia or in Boston who you know is going to be opposed to the Trump administration, and you get the injunction from that judge. That's unacceptable.
I would agree. Professor Alan Dershowitz, we appreciate your time today, sir. The book is called The Preventative State, The Challenge of Preventing Serious Harms While Preserving Essential Liberties. You can get it on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. So as he mentioned there, we will get those decisions coming up here at 9 o'clock Central Time, always right after my show ends. We can't come on and talk about them. So, Kim, you'll be talking about a lot of these on Monday morning.
That's right. Yeah, well, you'll be off the entire week gallivanting,
hopefully on
a beach. Around the beach. Yeah.
Hopefully on a beach somewhere with my toes in the sand and maybe a cold drink in my hand.
Thoughts and prayers for you, Mark.
Thank you.
Whip out my tiny violin.
Some of us are going to have to rough it next week, that's for sure.
Thanks for taking one for the team.
Sort of getting even with you two, because you two abandoned me last week, and you both went on vacation the same week.
Ethan,
you know,
let's plan that again.
What's I'm up for it. I can do it.
Hey, you know what, Ethan? I have about 12 weeks coming up. If you wanted to take any time off, I can let you know.
Starting in late August, your vacation is currently suspended, Ethan.
My vacation starts when baby comes, basically.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. All right. Coming up, we're going to check in with our friend Chad Pergram. He's on Capitol Hill. He's probably got a few more details. This guy knows more about the inner workings of what's going on in the Senate and the House than about anybody else up there. I think he's the best reporter in Washington, D.C. We're going to get to Chad on the other side of the break here. We're going to get to our Queen of Hearts drawing. We'll announce the winner for our Guns and Hoses, folks. We're going to do that at 8:35 today, because the only time I could get to Chad Pergram was coming up here in this next break. So we'll be back in just a minute.
No, it's a good bill because the left hates it. And the left hates it because the bill actually empowers families, empowers Americans versus empowering government. It cuts taxes for moms and dads, which is a good thing. It says for hardworking people, we're not going to tax tips. It says if you're an able-bodied adult getting in our welfare system, getting taxpayer money, well, guess what? You're going to have to work now. It says we're going to make sure we have enough resources to keep the border secure that President Trump has accomplished, you know, our border security. And it, in our tax code, builds in school choice, gives parents the choice of where they're going to send their son or daughter to school to get the best education. That is all about empowering people, about empowering families, which is a good thing, and that's why the left doesn't like it.
That is Congressman Jim Jordan talking about the big, beautiful bill, but parts of it have been stripped out. And if you were listening earlier, we had Congressman Eric Burleson on about 7:35, who told us he's a no. As it stands right now, we've got Chad Pergram with us right now. He's senior congressional correspondent for Fox News up on Capitol Hill. Chad, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to get you on here because you've forgotten more about what's going on in the Senate and the House than most people even know. And I wondered what's going on with the majority leader up there, Thune, and the parliamentarian.
Well, they're basically having to rewrite the entire bill. I mean, I shouldn't say the entire bill, but a big chunk of it, because some of these provisions don't match Senate budget rules. The Senate parliamentarian serves as the referee. She is in charge of those things. And you can vote to overrule the parliamentarian, or in this case, you can move to waive the Budget Act, as it's called. But that needs 60 votes, so you're not going to get very far doing that. You know, John Thune yesterday said, yeah, this was a speed bump. He said, we have plan B, we have plan C. Let's see what we can do. But, you know, I thought about 24 hours ago that they would have a vote sometime during the calendar day today to actually vote to get on the bill. That's probably not going to happen. It might happen sometime tomorrow, and then they, you know, if you want to go down in the weeds here, I'll just tell everybody.
Yeah.
There's 20 hours of debate, up to 20 hours of debate. They might not use all that. And then they actually start what they call the Votorama, which is where you take roll call vote after roll call vote after roll call vote. Now, in recent Votoramas, they have taken anywhere from 9 hours and change to just under 15 hours. That's consecutive voting. So if I'm talking to you on a Friday morning, they don't have the bill done yet. They have 20 hours of debate before the Votorama. That's going to last between 9 and 14 plus hours. And then you go to final passage. You see how that easily gets us into Monday, if not beyond. Now, Mark Wayne Mullen is a Republican senator from Oklahoma. He told me yesterday, and I spoke with him again this morning, he thought they'd get this done maybe before people go to work on Monday morning. Now, you mentioned Congressman Burleson. We had him on our air yesterday, and he was just like, you mean to tell me we've done all this work in the House, we put this bill together, and they're just going to jam us from the Senate, sight unseen, and we're just supposed to accept that and pass it before Friday, 4th of July, the deadline? That's why he's a no. And guess what? Somebody once told me it's about the math. They can only lose, you know, a handful of votes in the House and still pass it. So that's one no there, potentially. You might have another no from somebody like Thomas Massie. Right. I will say there are some of these Republicans who often, complain and say we're not going to vote yes, and then they vote yes at the end. We'll see.
So how many people are a no that you've talked to so far? Because like you said, Burleson was a yes initially.
Right. Well, I mean, he was somebody who voted for the bill a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, so but that was a different bill.
Yeah. True.
The bill has changed.
True.
I mean, but people can't really, you know, what happens when the president calls them? What happens when the speaker gets on their case and they say, are you really going to be the person on the hook that killed this thing? It's often said that when you get bills of this magnitude, that the details matter. I might amend that a little bit in this case only, that the details don't matter. Of the broad things they agree upon, but there's these other specific things in the bill that are very challenging to deal with, and they might not matter at the end of the day because they say, look, if they get a call from the president says, you got to go in and vote yes. Do they buck the president at that point? The Senate, I can point to a universe of about 11 different senators of all different stripes who might have problems with the bill, ranging from Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, moderate Republicans, to conservatives, somebody like Rand Paul from Kentucky or Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. Ron Johnson said yesterday that he was not going to vote yes to proceed until he saw the whole bill. Now, they can lose a couple of votes there and still do so. But beyond that, you see, this is where there's a lot of happy talk around here. But I'm giving you the reality.
Sure.
It's going to be a challenge to get it done.
I'll bet it is. Chad Pergram joining us right now from Capitol Hill, Fox News. And so you're in the halls there all the time. You've been up there for a long time. Do you know Elizabeth McDonough? What do you know about her?
I know her very well, actually. She's always been a straight shooter. There's only so many people who can do this job, who know the Senate rules. She's been there for years. There have only been, I'd have to look it up, but there's only like 8 or 9 parliamentarians in the history of the Senate. She's spoken to my class when I taught for Miami University here many times.
Oh, wow.
There are some Republicans who are calling for her to be fired. Guess what? We've heard that before. Guess what? She has worked for both Democrats and Republicans. The Republicans, if they were to, you know, and just because you get rid of the parliamentarian doesn't mean you necessarily get somebody else who's going to rule differently. And so this is where they go in and they literally work the refs. Both sides come in and make their case on different policy provisions and try to persuade her to rule one way or the other. And as I say, you can overrule her by waiving the Budget Act, but you got to get 60 votes to do that. But she's generally very well thought of on both sides of the aisle. But I said this on our air just a little bit ago. Back in the 1980s, there was a parliamentarian by the name of Bob Dove, and they fired him. The Republicans brought him back later. Bob Dole, when he was the majority leader, brought him back. Because, again, you're talking about a really unique universe of about 8 or 9 people on the planet who really understand these rules. It's not like you just go out and get another. There's not, you know, the free agent market is not really hot for this.
Yeah. But what about Trent Lott? Didn't I read that he overruled the parliamentarian one time?
Well, you can do that, again, with a vote.
If it's a budget vote.
I mean, you can make a point of order, and you know what this and you know what they did in the Senate. This is the so-called nuclear option, and both Democrats and Republicans did this. This is why the filibuster has been reduced in recent years. Let's start with Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, upset that they weren't confirming at a rapid pace some of the judges and other administration nominees, lower tier people. So he got the Senate into a particular posture where the ruling of the parliamentarian, which is, this wasn't even controversial, it was that, yes, you need 60 votes to end debate, break a filibuster on this type of nomination. And so they said, so the chair ruled, based on the advice of the parliamentarian, that it was something else. And then guess what? They voted, and you only need 51 votes to do that, and they changed the filibuster rule for all, you know, cabinet nominees and other judges. And then Mitch McConnell did the same thing in 2017 with Neil Gorsuch for the Supreme Court. So you know what you could do, though. This is real nuance here. Just because the parliamentarian rules something on the dais, the chair does not necessarily have to say that. You will hear the term of art is the ruling of the chair, not the ruling of the parliamentarian. If you're actually in the Senate session, so you could have a chair ignore a parliamentary ruling, but those parliamentary rulings that McDonough is making right now, those are all off stage. That's what's going to be in or out of the bill. That's not something that's happening in real time as the Senate does debate.
High stakes, Chad. We appreciate your time, my friend. We'll be watching your coverage today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. Chad Pergram up on Capitol Hill. We'll get to a break here. We'll do our Queen of Hearts drawing right after the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned. Love the fact that we get to do this exclusively here on 97.1 FM Chalk as a partner, the official radio partner of our friends for Guns and Hoses. And here's the deal. You go to their website, gunsandhosesstl.com, and you can buy these tickets, and then you get the opportunity to win money. You buy a card, you buy a slot, and if they pull your card, you're the winner. You could win $25, $100. You could win half the jackpot if you pull the Queen of Hearts. That's happened already once this year. And it's right now it's up to $3,000. So that'd be $1,500 in your pocket. Now, our winner this week is... card is the Three of Hearts in slot number 6. The card is the Three of Hearts, slot number 6. I'm sure they've already reached out to the winner at this point. Congratulations. They won $25. You could win much more, and all you have to do is buy a ticket to enter, and best of luck to you. We draw the winners every Friday right here at around 8:20, 8:30. I had to do it at 8:30 this morning because we had a chance to get to Chad Pergram there, and wow, what a wealth of information that guy is. Can you not agree?
Oh my gosh, that was the first thing I said as soon as we went to commercial break. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's so smart. He just breaks everything down in a way. It's still confusing to me, but at least it's a little bit more understandable when he's explaining this process and what this whole parliamentarian move means now moving forward.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, and I've said it already on the air this morning that she was appointed by Harry Reid. She was appointed by a Democrat, but she's been there through Democrat and Republican administrations, and nobody's chosen to replace her. And is she partisan? I don't know. The decision she made yesterday seemed partisan to me because she's removing things that I like from this bill. To hear Chad explain it, it's a little more nuanced than that. He claims, and I'm pretty sure I heard him say this correctly, there are only 8 or 9 people in existence who have the knowledge base of the Senate rules to do this job. Sounds like maybe Chad is one of them. Maybe they should make Chad Pergram the parliamentarian.
That'd be great.
But this lady has been in this job for a long time because apparently she knows the rules. And now it would be easy to, if you had a political opinion, to influence a piece of legislation by simply claiming it didn't meet the rules requirements.
So she's directly, I guess, under, when it comes to power in the Senate, it sounds like she's directly under Thune, because she can, which blows my mind that somehow this parliamentarian's able to go in and just slash any bit of a huge bill that she doesn't like, but the only person who does have the authority to do anything about it is Thune.
Well, why didn't she do more about the Green New Bill, the Green New Deal, and some of these other outrageous bills that have been passed by the Democrats? That would be my question.
Says her salary, by the way, according to Wikipedia, so, you know, take that for what you will, but it says it's just shy of $217,000. Just a fun fact.
Which, to be honest with you, in Washington, D.C., is not a lot of money. To live in Washington, D.C., that's not a lot. Now, maybe your husband also makes $200,000 and they're doing fine. I'm just saying that that's why it's mind-blowing when you think about the fact that people go there on a congressperson's salary and they come out multimillionaires years later. That doesn't happen to normal people. That's why they need to change the rules in terms of them being able to invest in stuff, because they have insider knowledge so often. How does Bernie Sanders have three houses? All he's ever been is a public servant. You don't go into public service to get rich, but a lot of them are rich. I don't know. It makes you wonder how in the world that happened. You know, something else we haven't talked about a great deal this morning is this argument that's going on in the country, and I addressed it a little bit earlier this week, on who's fighting who over the strikes on Iran. And it's funny how the polls don't show this, but the political pundits, including this reporter, his name was Willis, he was on with Gordon Deal this morning. Kim, I don't know if you heard this or not. You might have already been in studio when this happened. I don't know if you were listening or not. But he was reporting on this, and he was talking about the fact that because of people like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and Marjorie Taylor Greene, this has caused listen to his words, major rift in the MAGA base.
Questions swirling around the success of U.S.
Whoops, that's the wrong soundbite. That was the full thing there. Let me figure out what I did here, because I know I saved this and I edited this a little earlier. Let me see here. Well, no, I don't see it. I was pretty sure I saved it, but maybe I did not. So anyway, the reporter was Mike Willis. Here it is. Listen to this.
And so his, you know, the MAGA movement is very much severed over these Iranian strikes. Some of them still support him. I mean, it's very clear.
The MAGA movement is very much severed is the word that he used. Words matter. Listen.
Because he has claimed that it's just going to be a one-off. This is just one strike. We dismantle the program and then we get out. There will be no troops on the ground. It will not be, a long-drawn marathon endeavor. And we dismantle, you know, an adversary's nuclear program. We help an ally in Israel, and it's all said and done. We wipe our hands of it, and that still may be the case. So some of the MAGA movement has accepted that argument as part of the America First agenda, but not everyone. And there's a lot of very prominent Trump supporters out there who were furious, including, you know, the Tucker Carlsons of the world. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been very, very vocal in opposition to all of this, and they feel betrayed by these strikes. And
so that's Mike Willis, a reporter for The Hill. Do you feel like the MAGA movement's been severed?
No, I mean, there are people who are very surprising to me who have been against this. I don't know if I'd use the word severed.
Well, now, or even split. I mean, well, overwhelmingly, the polls show that people still overwhelmingly support Donald Trump and the action he took.
There is some splitting, but it's very, very minor. Now, I have a couple of thoughts on this. While I disagree with them and I support the strikes, I have to respect, and I'm choosing my words carefully here, I have to respect the fact that they're willing to put their neck out there and at least say they disagree, because they know they're going to get hate from a lot of people who like us support that whole movement.
Right.
I'm just shocked that they're so mad about it. And people keep saying, well, this was to help our ally Israel. Well, yeah, that was a part of it, maybe a big part of it. But this was also about protecting the world. I mean, Iran is the number one terrorist state. They have said not only death to Israel, but they've also chanted for years death to America. We have a flood of Iranian nationals coming over here to the United States who have been arrested, more than 100 of them over, I guess, just the last number of weeks.
Right.
There's concern on an international level. It is not just about us going to help Israel. Maybe that was what ultimately made Trump do it right now when he did. But this was so much bigger than that. I don't know if Trump would have done it had it just solely been about protecting Israel.
I think he might have. But I think you're
right.
But
you don't think there was another component of just
fear of... He dealt with a bigger problem.
Fear of them using a nuclear bomb on us or a different country.
Well, and I think that they would have, although the quandary here is that all the Democrats would tell you, we have no proof they were about to build a nuclear weapon. And then they see the bomb destruction of the whole plant. And then they come back and say, well, they could still build one quickly if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So you can't have it both ways. It's just that's the argument that doesn't make sense to me. All right. We're going to get to a break here because got my friends Mike McKenna from McAdoodles and Mark Sutherland from Stolach Whiskey and Stone Ledge Distillery are going to be in studio here in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. All right. Welcome back. You know, we're heading into the weekend. We're heading into the holiday weekend. In fact, it's always a good time to talk about fun things to do. I've got Mike McKenna from McAdoodles in here from out of Darden Prairie. And, of course, Mark Sutherland, who's with Stolach Whiskey and Stone Ledge Distillery down in Defiance. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great. Doing well. We got a busy studio in here. A couple of X-Radio guys, some real radio folks in the place, man. This is a good time.
That's awesome. It's good to see you both, man. I'll just say, you brought me, you know, I talk about McAdoodles all the time, a couple of the bottle picks. Look at this. This is the, if you're watching on the Facebook page, the Maker's Mark 46, the Nobletons, the Planters, Ozark Highland. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, you're welcome, man. And these are both great picks things that we do have featured on the shelves right now.
Yes,
Planters
we do.
Pick at $39.97, $8 off.
As soon as you walk in, you see that, don't you? That nice?
You know what, Mark, when you walk in, you don't just see other Mark's bottles.
Yes.
You also see his face staring right back at you.
It's kind of scary.
Is it kind of disturbing? Yeah,
little,
thank you, Mark.
Disturbing.
Do you have people running out of McAdoodles for that reason? They see Mark's picture and just turn around?
He's
or?
Peering into their soul.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like going to Six Flags for Halloween. Round a corner and there he is.
Fright Fest a little bit, yeah.
That's great. I have to tell you, Mike, I love what you're doing out there because, I can't keep up with all the different events you're having with NHL Hall of Famers and everyone. Including you got the folks from Stolach coming up soon, right?
We do, yeah. Stone Ledge is going to come in. Mark, maybe I'll let you speak to it in a second, but it's going to be on July 10th. We are going to be having an event at 6:30 to 8 p.m. We're going to bring in Sugar Fire Barbecue. And Mark, you're going to be featuring some of your distilled spirits.
Yeah, so we're going to have our brand new Single Barrel Reserve from Stolach Whiskey, which is a 10-year fantastic bourbon, along with our flagship, which is a 4-year. They are both Ozark Highlands. We're also going to feature our Inversion Vodka, which is probably one of the smoothest vodkas you've ever had. All of these are made 100% Missouri. Heirloom seed grains grown right around Columbia. Water, natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands. And then we're going to have a fun evening. We're gonna chat, we're going to drink, we're going to eat. We're going to talk about the history of the Ozark Highlands. We'll talk about Stone Ledge and everything we've got going on. Because there's a phenomenal next chapter of distilling history being written in Missouri right now.
Nice. Oh, it's true. We were talking about Nobletons earlier and now Stone Ledge, of course, and you guys, you've just opened up there in Defiance, right?
Correct, yes. We're in downtown Defiance, right at the S-curve. We're in what used to be called Terry and Kathy's.
Yeah.
It's been a tavern since 1893, so it's the first tavern in Defiance.
That's cool.
And we feature cocktails, martinis, also local craft beers, local wines. And we have a separate area for a cigar lounge treated with air handling and everything. So you can come down and enjoy a cigar and a whiskey, or you can stay in the non-smoking area, enjoy cocktails and martinis, and then live music every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 6. And then July 5th, we've got a big fireworks display going on next door as well, so come down that evening.
Outstanding. Is it true that you've had to put a cot in there for Tom Shaw, or is that
he
not
has
true?
Asked repeatedly. I keep having to remind him, as a distillery, he cannot sleep there.
It's great. I've been down there a lot. You've really got that set up nice and with the for the band out back and everything. It's just a fantastic spot.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Lots of fun. Yeah, thank
That's
you.
That's great, yeah. So out at McAdoodles, you guys are going to be, I love that you feed people because you got that Sugar Fire right next door out there, right?
Yeah, we do. And they're good partners of ours. And so anytime we do an event, they come in, they bring the food, and they usually curate it to what we're doing. So when we have them in, we'll do a custom barbecue sauce with the whiskey, make
That's
it unique.
Cool.
I mean, even this past week, we did a sake and sushi event.
Wow.
And the sushi was curated and produced by Chef Mark Deering of Sugar Fire.
You got to bring up sushi. I've been craving sushi.
Yeah. You're going to have to go for the cooked stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking
That's
about?
Right.
I've been down that road before, I know. But it's really cool to be able to have partners that can make things really custom and different for every event. And the best part of it really, you know, when these events are great. Like, I mean, truthfully, like, yeah, it's fun to make a little bit of money and things. What it really, though, is about is super serving our customers. Because they come in, they get a great experience. And more than anything, they get to hear Mark come in and describe in great detail what we just got the brief overview of. Mm-hmm. What Missouri's doing in distilling, where it's headed, why this product is so unique, and why, frankly, it's so good.
Yes.
People just don't know how good the Missouri products are.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff on the shelves right now that you have a choice to choose from. Now, the one that I poured here,
This is the flagship.
This is the flagship.
So this is the four-year-old bourbon, 55% sweet corn, 40% honey wheat, 5% malted barley. And then our new single barrel, which we'll get you a little sample of later, that is a 10-year-old version of our flagship.
Can't wait to try that. Cam, I'm sorry, you're kind of out of this picture here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. You know, I'm just thinking about this is so off topic, but if you don't already, Mark, you need to read audiobooks or something like that. Your voice.
Oh, he
does have a beautiful voice.
He does have a beautiful voice.
I forgot to smoke a pack and have four cups of coffee.
That's the secret, right?
Well, typically when you try to get your radio voice going, you have to come from diaphragm and everything else.
Voice.
But we do have NA spirits in our building. We have NA tequilas.
Those are growing in popularity, right? Like, not obviously just because I'm pregnant, but in general, people are really turning to those.
They truly are.
Yeah.
I mean, THC drinks are the same way, you know, and it's not as taboo. So, you know,
and wine. I know you have wine. Don't you have like a wine bar in McAdoo or something like that? Okay.
Not at all. So
with samples and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, if you want to swing on by for this event on the 10th, we got a couple spots reserved for you.
Oh, cool.
So
I'll be back.
Clear out that calendar on July 10th at 6:30. You can be our guest of honor there. Bring somebody with you.
Is macadoodles.com the best place for people to go to reserve?
You know what?
Or the Facebook page?
I would say let's go to our Facebook page, type in Macadoodles Dardine Prairie, hit up Instagram as well. Either of those will give you a good place to look
for it. Mike McKenna, Mark Sutherland, Stone Ledge Distillery, Stolock. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Always great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Get more at 971talk.com.